Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the Ecom Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping seven and eight figure brand owners build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And if you've been paying attention, you might have heard a thing or two about tariffs, just maybe. And tariffs, of course, one of the biggest concern for store owners, for yourself, is the margin compression you're going to see. And so pricing, I have found, is one of, you know, businesses, but also just in general, is probably the fastest, best lever you have to help with your margin and to counteract some of these tariffs. And so I thought, who's the person I know that knows the most about pricing for e-commerce sellers in the world? And so I reached out to Drew Marconi, who's the CEO and the co-founder of IntelliGems, which is a platform that focuses on A/B split testing, price maximization, and experiments for store owners. And we geek out about this stuff. We talk about what he's seeing, how much people are raising their prices in response to tariffs getting rolled out. We talk about how to think about experimenting and optimizing your pricing to maximize profitability, how to communicate it, how to think about doing it in different parts of your catalog. All of the things is what we're diving into today. So here's hoping that the tariffs all get rolled back or amazing deals get negotiated, and this is not a material issue, but in event it sticks around, this is going to be something you're really going to want to think through. And I'm sure you already are. So hopefully this is helpful. Important disclosure, I am an investor in IntelliGems. When I heard what they were doing 4.5 years ago, it made so much sense to me. I jumped in on the cap table. So have followed them for a while, but just wanted to make sure that was out there before we dive in, because it's important for you to know. So with that being said, let's go ahead and jump into my chat with Drew. Drew, sir, good to see you again. You've got the whiteboard in the background, like we're going to be planning a rocket launch here or something. People can't see it, but you look very official, very, very analytical, like the type of man you want to talk to about price increases.
Couple waterfall charts there. Yeah, I love a good whiteboard session.
And the mustache, between those two, the credibility is just like 150 out of 100. So you're already winning. Pricing, excited to geek out with you about this. You know, there's three ways, I think you even had this on your website, three ways that in tariff insanity land, as profits and margin come under brutal attack, that you can try to counteract that with crunching margin. You can move your supply chain, which I know some people may have done or may be considering, but also with the uncertainty in the air is probably not the best course of action and also takes a lot of work. You can lower your non-COGS costs, so your OPEX, which everyone's going to be doing anyway. Like that's just going to be something they're already doing. But the third thing, which is probably the easiest, and I've always, in my entire career, always championed this, and one of the reasons why we originally connected and why what you were doing at IntelliGems resonated so much with me, is pricing. Like by far, biggest bang for the buck I've ever done in any of the businesses I've owned has been playing with pricing. So we're going to dive into all of this. But before we do, I heard from someone, I think I was talking to Aaron Rubin at ShipHero, and he's got some interesting data. I would have expected to see, as soon as tariffs came out, a lot of people raising prices and experimenting with that, like that being just where the stampede went. But he said he saw prices in their data set really only rising by like 3% or so, which seemed very low to me. And I want to see if you're seeing similar things, or obviously you're in the pricing space, so it's going to be a little biased, but is that kind of in line with what you've seen, or do you feel like merchants are getting more aggressive and sharpening the pencil on this very quickly?
Yeah, so this has been of key interest to us, and was just getting some data points on this today. And it's surprisingly non-simple question of like, are prices going up? So we have this price scraper data set. So we track, I think it's 50,000 stores, and we're looking at like a sample of 10 products per store. And I'd say similar to Aaron's findings, we are seeing an increase, but perhaps not as large as you'd expect. Now, granted, incredibly broad base there. So we've seen, you know, versus last year, prices going up 0.3% per week for the last 8 weeks. So you run that over the course of 8 weeks, you end up at like a 2-3% increase. So pretty similar. And that, like last year, same time, we were seeing like a 0.15% increase. So while it's a moderate increase, it is still basically double what we saw last March and April. So there does seem to be a reaction. And like, you know, we also, another way that we looked at this data is what percent of stores are making price increases. you know, today versus this time last year. And we're seeing also about double there, like a 100 to 125% increase in the share of stores that are moving some prices up. So it is real. The other impact we're seeing, which is kind of interesting, in this data set, we can track price reductions as well, which often if people are doing a markdown or they're doing clearance or they're doing a sale that's site-wide, no code required, we would pick that up as a price reduction here. And the more significant impact has been a decrease in the number of price reductions. So fewer stores have been marking things down than we saw last year. And like both of these effects are amplified in apparel, which is an industry that we've cut into because they are more impacted by China in particular. So that's like, you know, the data itself doesn't provide the story, but a hypothesis we have is that brands who have inventory here or close by that, you know, that won't need to pay tariffs on are forgoing perhaps some of the usual clearance or sale events that, you know, would turn over that inventory and turn into cash and get more in the door. They are now holding on to that, basically extending runway of that duty-free inventory. And this is not a super promotional period typically. So like that's something that we're really keeping an eye on as we go into Memorial Day. Like, is there actually a reduction in sale activity because people want to make that inventory last? So interesting stuff. Small so far. I think from our customers, we work with about 2,500 brands on price tests and things of the nature. There's a lot of, let me be prepared, but let me also wait and see how things play out before I make any huge adjustments.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, even it's good to have you confirm that other data point, but I would have guessed, even if they're temporary, I'm just surprised you didn't see more, you know, 5-10% bump ups in price from things. And I wonder part of that too, how have the price tests that you have been working with your customers, which are stores, brands, gone the last month? Like obviously in the backdrop of all of this too, with the tariffs, is like consumer confidence is down. People just feel more skittish in general. I think that's pretty safe to say. So have you, in the tests that you've been running, have you seen people become more price sensitive materially over the last, you know, couple months?
Yeah. So I'm actually going to pin the price sensitive question and go back to one thing that we may not be seeing in the data. I think we've seen from our customers a lot of non-list price ways of increasing pricing. So we've actually seen a lot of interest in, can I raise my shipping threshold? Can I reduce the discounts that I'm giving out, like the welcome offer or bundle discounts? Can I change bundle sizes, increase my free shipping threshold? So all of those like wouldn't be captured in the readily available data if I'm tracking all the prices of these products. So I think there's a lot of that in our tests. This is the segue. Like we have seen those reliably perform. Like there's usually margin to take and squeeze on the shipping side, on like tailoring your offers, maybe to different audience or reducing it. On pricing, I actually wouldn't say that we've seen on customer elasticity a tremendous change from last year to this year. Last year was pretty price sensitive. So like 2022, first half 2023, we saw a lot of inelasticity. So people would test raising prices that more often than not worked. Since like mid-2023, we've actually seen lowering prices work on the margin more often. So, you know, 60% of tests find a winner that beat control when it comes to pricing. And of those that find a better price, we see like a 60-40 split that lower prices were winning. That hasn't notably changed. Like we're not seeing some big shift in consumer sentiment and they're more or less willing to react to a price change. It does tend to be different by product and by brand. What is changing is with that same elasticity, so different price points, you can predict how many people are willing to purchase, the correct price for the brand is changing because the brand, they are looking for the profit maximizing price. So I may be testing for my microphone like 80, 90, 100, 120. I know exactly how much revenue I'm going to make at each of those price points because this many people buy at 80, this many people buy at 120. What we're seeing people do now is model, okay, if my COGS are 20 on this, or if they're 24 now with duties, or 28 in the worst case scenario, that's actually going to change, which of those prices is profit maximizing. So like, while the customer reaction hasn't changed, the correct profit maximizing answer for the brands is changing, like depending on the day and depending on which projection you believe, because like the cost inputs are wildly varying.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. And I mean, you referenced a couple of times which test won or which one succeeded. And I think that also kind of boils down to a question that when people start, especially if they're DIYing their pricing, which is what I used to do back in the day, it takes a little thought to think through, what am I actually trying to optimize for here, right? Am I optimized for revenue, and after a lot of thought, actually it didn't take that much thought, but I settled on profit per visitor, right? Like that was the thing I was trying to maximize, you know, full stop. Is that how you think about it? And obviously I'm sure maybe there's some fringe cases where people there have different goals or they're, you know, just like different campaigns for paid. You're trying to optimize for reach or top of funnel or convert, whatever it is. But in general, is that what you recommend and you see the best case optimization for is just profit per visitor?
Yeah, that's the simple down the middle. Like you're not going to go wrong by optimizing for that. And that is basically, hey, you landed someone on the site, what are the percent chance they convert? What's the dollar value of that AOV? And what's the gross margin percentage of that order? And that's going to like lead you to that profit per visitor. The reason I like it is it lets you like normalize across different changes. So raising prices, you're going to reduce conversion rate, but probably your AOV will go up. Probably your margin percent is going to go up. Great. How did that impact on net? Okay. Giving a free gift, I'm going to increase my conversion rate. I'm going to drop my margin percent because now I'm adding extra cost to the order, but maybe I boost my AOV as well. And then your shipping team is maybe thinking about like shipping costs and fulfillment. And so it lets you like, I think more apples to apples compare initiatives. And I think it's just the right feedback loop for how you think about acquisition. Like you spent however many dollars getting that customer to the site, how much yield can you get from that customer? And then like, if you can make profit, if you could be like boosting revenue, boosting conversion rate, and actually losing more money, and then you don't have any profits to go scale your growth. So, I mean, like subscription businesses, maybe you're solving for new subscribers. You can model out like expected LTV of people. There is nuance to the profit per visitor metric, but you won't go wrong by using it.
Slightly sidebar here. Free gifts. Like you mentioned using that as an experiment. I can't, and this is just my personality, but I don't think I've ever in the history of my entire life been persuaded to buy something with a free gift, because I usually feel like they're tchotchkes or there's something I wasn't going to buy anyway. And that just sounds so uncompelling to me. But does that actually work? And obviously it depends on how well you can match up the gift and what it is. But is that something you see quasi-frequently working to help drive conversion?
I mean, personally, I love free shit. So I'm very really different than you. If you put the carrot in front of me, like I will do my best to earn it.
But on the margin, like that's what's going to push you over the edge for something?
Well, it'll get me to buy more. Like I think often people use it as an AOV boosting tool is where it's more powerful. It's less, I'm going to buy because I get this tchotchke, but oh, that tchotchke is a $15 value. I only need to spend $15 more. I'll go find a $20 item and put it into the cart. And it depends on the store. Like I think picking the right gift obviously matters a lot. You're looking for something that has value for the customer and also is not that much incremental cost for you. So a really clever use case I've seen in apparel, like Shinesy does this and Jambies do this, is they'll just give you, you'll get a random pair of boxers at $150. So if you spend $75, you get free shipping, but at $100 or $125, so another hurdle, you get a random pair. And it's like, great, that pair of boxers is as useful to me, the wearer, as any others. But for them, it's often like old patterns. It's things that are out of season that are going to
return
in the discount section anyway. Hopefully not returns. Momofuku, like who we work with, they often use, they have these like amazing flavored salts that it's like, you know, Szechuan chili salt. And so it's probably not the sort of thing I would buy on its own. I'm not going to like pay to get that shipped, but that will maybe get me to buy another bag of noodles, get me over that threshold, they can throw it in the box. It's no incremental shipping costs, very little incremental COGS, and like they pulled forward my purchase. So, I mean, your mileage may vary, but as a AOV booster, we do see it work quite a lot. And then you can use it as samples too. Like Huron is like a men's, I guess unisex, but they do deodorant and body wash. And so they'll use that to like send samples of other products. So then you're getting products in people's hands that you can like boost their LTV with.
Interesting. It makes a ton of sense. For shipping. Shipping, I feel like, has been something that I feel like early on people charge for shipping. And then Amazon came and you know, accustomed everyone to getting, you know, 30-minute shipping for, you know, anything you ever thought of. And of course, that drove many more store owners to say, well, we gotta be able to at least get in the ballpark here. And maybe it's just me, but I feel like there's been more of a deeper consideration in the last year or two about like, okay, well, let's revisit this. Like, maybe it's not worth giving up, you know, a third of our margin to ship stuff. What are you seeing on that in terms of the philosophy for brands? And then most importantly, and again, I'm asking you to generalize here. It's always going to vary based on brands and experiments and use cases. But what are you seeing? Are you seeing that same kind of thing? More and more people are starting to charge for shipping to keep that margin high, and it is being effective in optimizing profit per visitor?
That's been the story of the last, like that's been a pretty continuous trend since I'd say 2022, where people are like 2021, 2022, I feel like I heard a lot of, oh, we do free shipping because that's what Amazon does. And then kind of like with iOS 14 and a half and a bunch of margin compression challenges back in 22 is when people peeled back that assumption a little bit. And we've almost never seen straight up free shipping be the profit per visitor maximizing option. When you offer free shipping for everyone, you are basically subsidizing your low purchase price baskets with one item that's small, that's probably going to correlate with low LTV customers. Meta's getting trained to send those people to you at the same blended cost as your great customers. And so there's almost like a qualification element that a shipping threshold provides of like, hey, these are people who are willing to spend, have an indication to be high LTV. So yeah, like I think as people have run those tests where let me try adding in a free shipping threshold, you typically don't see a huge drop off in conversion. They typically see quite a big increase in AOV, which has knock-on effects of like people are trying more products and you're probably getting better customers. And then the margin percentage on those is going to be a bit higher because you, number one, like it often doesn't cost twice as much to ship a $100 order as a $50 order. Number two, for people who don't hit the threshold, they're going to give you $3, $4, $5 for shipping, which goes straight to the bottom line. So that was like chapter one was, okay, thresholds work. This is working. And now we're seeing people get a lot more fine-grained with that. So one really interesting experiment that one of our customers ran was like, hey, if I surprise new customers with free shipping at checkout, like they made it to checkout, but they didn't hit the threshold, does that maximize it for that segment? And so getting a little bit more into like personalizing what works for different segments, and maybe there's certain channels where you just want to totally minimize friction and abandon carts, give them free shipping, but keep a higher standard on the main site. We're seeing people play around with like the options that are available. So maybe your free option is a 5 to 7 day estimate, and you have a 3 to 5 day option available that basically doesn't cost you that much, like cost you a little extra, but you offer a $2 or $3 upsell for it. And okay, great. You can get some people to opt into that and that's profitable. And you can, you know, there's a lot of optimization you can do in how those rates are presented and the kind of menu and value ladder of ones that you're providing. So that's where we're seeing people go now. And it just historically hasn't been owned by the same people who are owning CRO, who are thinking about marketing. But like the checkout page, those people are like the closest to the money. And in SaaS, we say is like, or sales, sell close to the money. So now people are like, hey, I can actually optimize these people who have already displayed intent, who have full carts, are really trying to get there. What's the granular like personalization and test on shipping that we see?
Hey, Andrew here, and a quick aside to introduce you to Sam, the owner of ParkerBaby.com, where they sell baby products. Sam's a great guy, a family-focused entrepreneur, has four kids, and despite running a very meaningful business, carves out time to spend a ton of time with them. It's a very cool way he runs his life and business. And just a quick little snapshot about his experience with e-commerce Fuel, our private vetted community for 7- and 8-figure store owners.
The first thing that comes to mind, a specific way that ECF has helped my business, my bottom line, was a thread a couple years ago discussing and laying out a plan for reclaiming overpayment on tariffs importing from China to the US. And that thread alone saved me tens of thousands of dollars, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars.
After hearing literally hundreds of comments like this over the last decade our community's been around, it's easy to offer our 10x guarantee. If you don't get at least a 10x ROI on your membership in the first year, in terms of increased revenue, saved time, and saved money, we'll give you a full refund plus an extra $1,000. But many of our members report seeing massive value in just the first month or two when applying it to their 7- or 8-figure business. You can learn more about the community and apply for membership at ecommercefuel.com. Okay, back to the show. What are some of the, that's a really interesting idea to surprise people with free shipping from, maybe it's a certain channel or a certain, whatever it is, if you think they're going to be higher value customers or whatever the reason. What other things are you seeing with personalization in terms of price testing? What other kind of things are you experimenting with or seeing people experiment with?
Yeah, a lot around personalized offers. So I think like dynamic pricing is going to come for e-commerce in one way or another. Like I think that's somewhat inevitable. You look across industries like travel, entertainment, increasingly digital entertainment are moving dynamic. You see stuff with like retail and digital tags becoming more dynamic. Like that will happen for e-commerce. Dynamic pricing does not mean surge pricing. It doesn't necessarily mean that like, oh, everyone wants t-shirts right now. The price is going to jack up. Where we've seen the most interesting stuff is around being dynamic and personalized around things like the offers that you're giving to customers, the clearance section, the ordering of products that you're putting in front of customers. So, you know, let's take Memorial Day promotion. And we're working on setting this up with someone right now. Last year, this brand ran 20% off for everyone, whole store. Worked fine. They know that they have some VIP customers who will work for a hard, like a higher achievement offer of spend this much, get a lot off. So high value, maybe there's up to like 35% off of value, but they need to spend a couple $100 to get there. That wouldn't work for everyone, but it works for the VIPs. There's like a churn subscriber segment who they work on a ton to get back in the fold. And they have like a discounted subscription of the product, like a very targeted offer that they know works for those people. And it's rich, but would kind of be irrelevant if you'd never subscribed before. And so what they're building with us is, hey, we're actually going to have a menu of 5 different offers. And that's a combination of both the discount, but also the merchandising, like how the site looks, how the cart looks, how we're promoting this to you. And they're using personalizations to deliver those different offers to different segments. So like, great, I'm cutting it up in email, in SMS, with segments on site. And as those people land and we tag them with that segment, their entire site experience changes. And so like, that offer is being tailored to what they know about that customer. And now you go from this like single flat 20% off for everyone to something that is now like maximizing the profit per visitor for each segment. So right now we're seeing a lot of that being done manually, or like this free shipping for new customers surprise at checkout, where we're exploring a lot like on our product side is, hey, how can this be more automated? We're just solving that question for you without, you know, all the manual buildup. But there's still like, I mean, most brands, I think, talk a lot about personalization and do quite a lot of personalization in channel, like tons of different variations of ads, tons of variations and segments on email and SMS. And then you send a super tailored SMS message and everyone lands on the same version of the site. And so like, we see a lot of desire. How can we make that easier? Get it to match up, get the site to rhyme with whatever the person just clicked through from.
And is that something that you talk about like the three or four different on-site personalized landers for those different places. Is that something that's getting managed via some kind of app on the Shopify side, or is that something that is integrated into IntelliGems and that it can manage a lot of that kind of dynamic changing based on, or is it just, you're just setting up different pages? You can do it a bunch of different ways, but how deep does the integration go to help facilitate with that inside the platform?
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely DIY ways of doing it. For us, like the reason why we've extended to that is we can have really robust targeting because we A/B test. Maybe you just want to A/B test on this campaign, in this country, in this currency, based on this behavior. So we have all that targeting. We can then change how the site looks because we do all this content stuff. And so it doesn't even need to be a separate landing page. We can completely rewrite the homepage and give an entirely different cart with like CSS, JavaScript, themes, templates, and then actuate checkout. Hey, this should be a different price. This discount should automatically apply. This shipping rate should change. And like we can dynamically hook into all of those parts of checkout in Shopify so that like, you know, the rule becomes change the whole site and deliver this like unique cart experience. So it's, you know, the DIY version would be landers and codes and having these like more strict funnels. Part of the reason we've gotten into it is, hey, we can make this very, very native and change prices, shipping rates, discounts in like a very automated way. So, I mean, there's all sorts of ways to skin the cat on this. What we try to coach our customers on is just like, just pick one thing to personalize. It's not as if you need to go from a static version of the site to 100% personalized. Like, go have some hypotheses and build a couple funnels based off email flows you send or text flows you send or like your next promotion. Try two different ones for two different segments of customers.
When you think about product price, an AOV, let's say somebody's got an AOV of, you know, $25, they sell phone cases versus someone who's got a, you know, they're selling high-end, you know, air compressors for $500, which I really would have come up with some more creative than either of those two options. But it's about as boring as they get. You know, when you think about how price sensitive people are people, I could see two things. I could see people on the high side, they're already paying a lot of money. So they're going to be a little less price sensitive, right? Because they're already thinking about spending $500. If it's, you know, add another $50-$60, what's the big deal? I could also see the inverse, where maybe on the low side, you know, people, or, you know, I don't know where it's easier to jack up pricing or where it's more sensitive, where the elasticity is stronger or weaker. Is there any kind of trends that you have observed? If you're selling the phone cases, do you have more margin than the person higher up because they're starting at a low price point, or are they just coming in and even though it's cheaper, they're in a cheaper mindset because they're only going to shell out $20? So it's kind of a weird question, but I guess the straighter, more straightforward way to say it is, how should you think about price changes differently selling cheaper versus more expensive products?
We're often looking at like percent change for elasticity. So like the argument for it's easier on with a $25 phone case is like, hey, you know, a $3 increase is actually, that's like a 12.5%, 13% potential lift for you. Whereas to get a 13% lift on the $400 air compressor, or forget the example, that's like, you know, we're now talking adding $50. So I don't know if our recommendation typically changes. Like at the high AOV, there's probably less gamification that you're doing. Like in the low AOV environment, your bigger gains are going to come from getting people to spend more at once. So it's like, can I do bundles and value packs? Now, certainly go see, like every dollar counts in the low AOV. If you can be 26, 27, but you are likely, you're going to encounter more cliffs. 30 feels really different than 25. 35 feels really different than 30. Once you're up at $400, like, okay, 400 to 500 is a cliff, but is 479, do people see it as that different than 429? Maybe, maybe not. So like you do run into more of these perception cliffs where it becomes more important. Just build the cart. Also amortize your shipping cost. Like if you're shipping one phone case, that's going to meaningfully eat into that margin. So get more in that box. At the $400 price point, I don't know how heavy this air compressor is, but you're probably not trying to give all these incentives and have a progress bar in the cart. You're probably just going to give free shipping on that because it's heavy. And then it's just a question of like, where are your competitors? How much are people willing to pay? And a bit less of an AOV game, more of like a pure price question.
Any thoughts or tips on communicating, especially in you know, tariff bizarro intermediate land where we have no idea what's going to happen? If you are going to roll out prices or experimenting, and let's say, hey, you do experiment, we're going to roll out, or if you just say, hey, listen, I'm not going to experiment with this at all. Margin compression is coming. Prices are going up 15% starting tomorrow. Executive decision, given there's a chance this sticks around. How do you best communicate that? You know, you've got, should you use tariffs as a scapegoat? Have you seen any feedback, you know, positive or negative for that? I know a lot of people communicate it ahead of time and say, hey, we're raising prices in 3 days to kind of like pull forward some of that revenue, which can be effective. Any thoughts on all that or otherwise?
Yeah, I think if you want growth and pull like revenue pull forward, the hey, prices are going to change in the near future is a good tactic. Like, we've seen that work on a few of our brands, especially high ticket items. It probably is a little played out now, or like it's slightly less top of mind for consumers, but that crushed for, I mean, we talked to like a furniture brand that made 75 grand off a single email, which is like 4 days worth of revenue for them. If you have to raise prices, if the tariffs become true, I lean towards holding off communicating that. Make the change if you have to. But one of the reasons I like pricing as a lever to respond to tariffs is it is reversible. Like, if you're reducing op spend and you fire someone, that's hard to reverse. If you like move your supply chain slower, reversible, but slower to reverse. If you move your pricing because you have to today, but the conditions change next week and you can change it back, great. That is like, you can click a button. So I would probably avoid communicating like, we have changed prices or we are. Number one, because it gives you like a clear out to reverse it. And number two, like, I think by communicating that, you know, you're implicitly discouraging the customers from buying, or you're not, it's not encouraging them to buy in any way. There's no incentive like that prices will change soon to act quickly. There's then the question of like, do you communicate it on your site? Or do you talk about tariffs at all, which is something that we've been thinking about a lot. And there's different modes. There can be showing on the product page or on the homepage, like, this is inclusive of duties. There's some people who are adding a surcharge to the cart. Our findings there so far have been, do not add surprise charges to the cart. Like, it will just crush your abandoned cart rate. So transparency throughout. If you are going to name tariffs, like, point the blame on your site, it is a political, it is interpreted by the customers of these brands as somewhat political. So like, you kind of have to know your audience. And we've seen some brands that work well for and other brands not, and they've pulled back on the messaging. Yeah, I mean, like, that's one that we would definitely recommend testing into. And we do have some we have like a free app that people can use to break out tariff price for their customers. But I would probably, there's just still so much uncertainty about what the long-term cost implications are going to be. I think by naming it and by telling customers this price is impacted by tariffs, you're kind of, it's like when you order an Uber and you see surge pricing is live, you're like, well, I'll wait 10 minutes and see if it comes down. Like, you're kind of encouraging people to wait and see and put off the purchase.
It's a shame that we don't have someone who's like a very niche e-commerce comedian, because the amount of material and gold that could come from getting to the checkout page and the different tariff fees and the surcharges and the names and there's a lot there. There's a lot of good material there you could roll with.
Tariff shipping protection.
Yeah, tariff shipping protection. What, before we get into a few of the cool ways you're helping people do this with IntelliGems, what did I miss? What did I miss asking you, or anything else that's really important for people to think about as they're thinking about pricing, kind of from a fundamentals principles here?
Yeah, there's a couple other, maybe just touching on a couple other things we've seen people doing with the tariff uncertainty. Like, that obviously has just created more interest in changing prices than we've ever seen. So just some tips. Number one, think about your pricing as a portfolio. Like, do not say my costs are going up 10%. I need to add 10% of price across all of these products. If you went and could find out the true elasticity of your whole catalog, it would be all over the map, product by product. So to the best of your ability, try to go take price and make up the margin from products and segments that can bear it. Like when you go up 10% every way, you're drawing a straight line across the whole thing. And like, you're going to be trying to take price from products that won't give it. So testing is a good way to get that intel, but also like worst case, you probably have intuition from your customers about what is useful there. If you do just need to roll it out, like Bill is hitting today, you need to hire prices. You can think about like a holdback style test where, hey, 90% of people are getting new prices just because that's how it has to be. But I'll keep 20% or 10% of people on the old price so I can at least collect data on the elasticity should things change. We talked about this earlier, but number three, like if you do have price elasticity data, build yourself a model where you can play around with different COGS assumptions. Like it is now about the profit maximizing price points, not the revenue maxing price points. And yeah, just like don't wait for perfect. Just fight your way through it and start taking action because that's the way that you're going to get data. So those are just some of the other things that we've been coaching people on with respect to tariffs.
It's funny you mentioned your entire catalog is not, it's more nuanced. I have found in past brands that I've owned that the hero product, kind of the big ticket, you know, let's say the $100 AOV product, people were extremely price sensitive on because the way they would start shopping is they would start shopping for that product. They look at like four or five different places. Okay, here, the product here is, this is the best price for it. You go to the accessories and they were much, much, much less price sensitive on those. They're obviously cheaper. You had so much more, you could move the hero product 5%. It would make a big difference. You could double the price on the much cheaper $10 or $20 accessories. And not only would it make less of a difference, but you would sometimes make as much profit on the accessories as you would as a hero product. And the hero product was almost like a loss leader to get people to buy the accessories. So
yeah.
So we would raise prices on those. We would keep that all in mind. We'd have categories where, so we of course, this is before IntelliGem, so we couldn't use something as cool as this, but we have four or five different buckets. We'd raise prices in categories to kind of try to hack that.
Yep. Yep. Makes total sense. It's like the hero product is buying people into the brand. Once they're bought in, you can sell them other stuff.
Yeah, works great. Drew, we talked a lot of like fundamental principles, some DIY stuff you could do, but how, give us kind of the glamorous picture at IntelliGems a little bit here. Cause it's, you do a lot of this behind, you know, make it very easy, streamlined to experiment and play with all of this stuff with a lot of certainty and being able to filter out all that noise like you talked about. So yeah, what can people do with this and how does it work?
Yeah, I mean, IntelliGems, we're a profit growth platform. So we want to be the hub where a brand can come and pull a ton of different levers to grow profit per visitor. So anything testing related, you can experiment. That can be with prices, offers, shipping, but also all of your content and your UX, track the impact to profitability. You can do that through personalizations is the other big part of the platform. So as you find out, hey, this offer or this experience worked better for these segments, great. Let's go find local maxima instead of trying to solve at the high level. You can do that increasingly through analytics. So a bunch of our customers, yeah, we replaced Google Optimize for a bunch of our customers. Now people are kind of fed up with Google Analytics. And you know, we collect a ton of data on your profit per visitor across funnels, across dimensions, across visitor types. So that's something that we're making a lot more robust in the platform. And ultimately through more dynamic and algorithmic features. Like we want people to be able to press a button and we will go figure out the right offer, the right threshold, the right price for your product. So, you know, we've been around for 4.5 years at this point, and I remember pitching that to people back in 2021 of like, imagine a button and we automatically tested your prices and it would go figure it out. And they were like, no, whoa, whoa, whoa. Like, I just want to A/B test it, man. And so that's what we built. But so much of where we're spending time these days is building out the more like set and forget, we'll solve it in the background. Cause that's where we came from. Like my co-founder and I were in ride sharing dynamic pricing. I think we now have both the data set and the trust, hopefully from customers to pull that off. So, you know, all the experimentation, all the personalization and data exploration, and then increasingly more dynamic features. So, you know, always looking to jam with folks on that if there's any willing guinea pigs.
Love it. It's a great platform. Obviously, I'm a little bit biased. We're both biased, but it's like I said at the top. I mean, there's nothing in your business, especially given now that you can do that's as fast, has as big of an impact, and is as reversible if you need it to be in the pricing?
Yeah. And I think it's just like, it hasn't been a lever that's been pulled enough. You know, every team I talk to does CRO, conversion rate optimization. And someone on the team has CRO as part of their job, which is great. It's valuable. We want to give them the best tool for doing CRO, but it's like, we're also trying to open people's perception that CRO needs to include pricing, needs to include making sure your offers and discounts are incremental, needs to include your shipping strategy. All of that is pricing and is about growing profit per visitor. So it's a little bit of this like mind expansion game, and it's fun. I mean, it's like so early days in e-com. You pull into a bunch of stores and it's like basically still a brick and mortar facsimile where we all walk in and we all get the same version of the store, and the clearance section is in the back on the far right side of the menu, and like the cart looks the same, and there's just so much data available by running a digital business that is barely being taken advantage of right now. So I still think it's very, very early days for e-com, which I'm pumped.
Well, I'd say particularly in this segment, which is pricing, like the two hardest parts of business, I would bet most people would agree with me on this. First one is people. Like, they're the best and the hardest part of business. It's just, that's kind of a thing that I think, I don't know if I'd say universally accepted, but I'd say 8 out of 10 entrepreneurs would say that's the case. And then secondly, kind of close behind that is pricing, because the thing with pricing is you have so many variables, but not only that, but like pricing doesn't just play into your economics. It plays into your brand positioning. It plays into your perception. And it's, you know, you move one little thing with that. And particularly for, you know, if you're gonna be in e-com, you got to be selling something interesting, unique, you know, that's proprietary, and brand is a huge part of that if you're going to be succeeding today. So it's just such a complex thing to have a suite of tools that lets you do it more, test this and experiment with it more rigorously. It's super cool. It's super cool. Well, Drew, thank you, man. Appreciate all the help with all the tariff stuff, helping merchants. It's been really fun getting to know you over the years and watching your guys' progress. So keep up the good work, and thanks for all the beta.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me on.
If you're an entrepreneur who wants to connect with other experienced owners who are working to build a financially vibrant business alongside a rich, meaningful life, head on over to ecommercefuel.com to learn more and connect with 1,000 entrepreneurs just like you. Work hard, adventure often, and forge what matters. Look forward to seeing you again next Friday.